Paul Harris filling in for Steve today. Thanks for listening. I'm a big fan of my next guest, David Pogue. He's the personal tech columnist for the New York Times. I read his column every Thursday. Seen him doing stuff for CBS Sunday Morning. And through the years, he has alerted me to a lot of cool stuff. One of the things I'm very thankful to him for is the fact that he has written missing manuals for some Apple products. If you bought the new iPhone 4S in the 3 months that it's been on sale now, you know that when you buy the box, you get a phone inside and not much else. Not a whole lot of instruction in there. Certainly not a lot of the esoteric stuff that the Apple engineers have buried inside that phone. Some of it incredibly cool, but you'll never know about it unless you run into another iPhone user who may have happened to have stumbled across it. Well, David saves that in his new book, which is called iPhone, The Missing Manual. It was just published yesterday, and here he is today to talk about it. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Hey, Paul. How are you?
Nice to have you on. What, this is like your fourth edition of a missing manual for iPhone, isn't it?
Yeah, this is the fifth one, and it's getting thick. I got to tell you, it's a little weird when your book weighs three times as much as the phone.
Let's start with, besides they want to keep you in the publishing business, why doesn't Apple put out a manual or even put one online?
You know, that's a really interesting question. I think I'm uniquely qualified to answer it. It's not Apple. You know, I do not just Apple. I do, you know, I have a Windows 7 missing manual and a Google missing manual and so on. But manuals have fallen out of fashion with electronics companies for two reasons. One is they've discovered that not many people actually look at them. So they're going to all this expense and trouble to create a manual, and then people wind up, very few of them wind up looking at it. And the second reason is once they're done with the gadget, the iPad or Windows 7 or whatever, they want to ship it. They want to start earning income on their new product. They can't wait for another couple weeks while the manual is printed and bound and stuff. So it's also a time-saving move. They'd rather leave it to us authors.
But you'd think they could at least put it online.
Yeah, you'd think. I guess one thing led to another, and now they're just used to people buying books if they want one. But, yeah, that's a good question. I mean, there actually is an iPhone online manual. There is a PDF you can download. It's really basic, and it doesn't have any jokes, and it doesn't have any illustrations, and you can't really read it in the bathroom. So
for that, you've got to go to Pogue.
I think I have a place.
Yeah, you absolutely do. All right, so let's talk about some of the features that are in here. Maybe people just got the new iPhone 4S for Christmas or for Hanukkah, and they're looking at it, and they're going, okay, I know that it's a phone, and I know it's got a calendar, and I know I can do maps, and I know it's got this new Siri function where I can talk to the phone. But let's talk about some of the other cooler things that you have found in there.
Sure. Well, I mean, Siri, of course, is a great example of something that everybody knows the basics. You can say, set my alarm for 7:30. You can say, add an appointment with Mike to my calendar for Thursday at 2. You can do a lot of basic stuff like that. But once you delve in, you'll find out that, you know, you can dictate punctuation. You can, one of my favorite secret features is you can dictate relationships. So you can say, call my wife or give me directions to my boss's house. And the first time you do that, it doesn't know who your wife or your boss is. So it pops up your address book and say, who's your wife? And you tap your wife's name or your boss's name. And from then on, it always knows. So you can say, you know, call my boss's cell phone or text my daughter or, you know, contact my boyfriend. And it'll know what you're talking about. It's really cool.
That's a good one. I like that.
The camera shortcuts are really cool. This was in the Apple promotional material, but a couple tweaks that not many people know of. So now when you have your iPhone, and this is any iPhone using the new operating system, iOS 5, not just the 4S, often photographic opportunities come up quickly, and you don't want to turn the phone on, enter your password, scroll to the phone, to the camera app, open the camera. You want to take the picture quickly. So there's this new feature where if the phone is off, it's asleep, it's in your hand, you double press the home button, like tap, tap, and a little camera button appears that if you tap it, you go straight to the camera, no muss, no fuss, no password, and you can actually press the volume key, the middle volume key, as a shutter button, so you don't have to tap the screen. So you're really holding it like a camera. So that's really cool, but what about security? Everyone was complaining, wait a minute, doesn't that mean that some jerk could pick up the phone that I left at my desk and take a picture of his naked butt and send it to my contacts because it bypasses the password. Well, no, they've even thought of that, because if you fire up the camera module that way by double-clicking the home button, then you are locked into the camera module. You can't get out of it. You can't send a picture. You can't look at your older pictures. You're locked into just taking pictures. So they've even thought of the security there. It's kind of cool.
How much of the stuff that's in here, including what you just talked about, had the people at Google already started building into Android and Apple heard about it and said, let's do that? Or does the process usually work vice versa? Apple does it first, and then Google says, let's put that in Android, and so do all the others.
Oh, that's a great question. So actually what usually happens is, in many cases, Apple starts falling behind, as it did with speech recognition. Android phones have this wonderful dictation. You can speak instead of typing anywhere on an Android phone. Apple had nothing like that. But what Apple likes to do is to fall behind and then leapfrog, as though to say, hey, we were on it. We just wanted to make it better. So in this instance, they bought this company called Siri and definitely leapfrogged Android. There are at least two Android apps that are trying to catch up to Siri. They're nowhere near as good at this point.
Yeah.
But the whole thing, I have to say, the whole thing is completely revolutionary on whether it's Android or iPhone. The concept of the phone not as a phone anymore, but as this robot that you like the other day I was driving, okay, I never touched the phone. I never picked up the phone. I heard that there was a text message come in. So you pick up the phone, you don't look at it. When it goes upright, like against your ear, that's the command for Siri. It knows that you want to say something to Siri. So I said, read me my text messages. So read me my text. There's a message from my assistant that said, can you meet with whatever, Microsoft on Thursday? So I said to the phone, what's on my calendar for Thursday? And it read off my schedule, and it said I had something at 3 o'clock. So I said, change my 3 o'clock appointment to 6 o'clock. I sang this to the phone. It goes, your appointment is changed. And then I said, text my assistant to say, I'm okay for 3 o'clock now. So this entire transaction, without ever looking at the phone, and, you know, I triggered it by holding it up to my ear, but I just as well could have left it on the seat next to me and clicked the button on the earbuds cord or whatever. But all of a sudden, it's not a phone anymore. It's something really new that we haven't had before.
You know, I was talking about this, part of this concept, because I didn't know about the things that you just mentioned that you could do, but the whole concept of using Siri in the car, I was talking about last week after the National Transportation Safety Board came out with their recommendation that all cell phone use should be banned in cars because it's distracted driving and you shouldn't, even with a hands-free device, you shouldn't be able to use it. And I pointed out that they're way behind the technology curve on this one, because what they really don't want you to do is text by looking at your phone and thus taking your eyes off the road. But with technology like Siri built into the phone, you can either hold it up to your ear or just push that home button and say, send a text to my wife. And then Siri says, what would you like to say to your wife? And then you say it, and you never have to look at the phone. It does it all. It reads you back your message. It says, do you want me to send this now? And you can tell it, yes, send that now. And it does it. And I think that's such a great boon for communication in the car. Now, there will be a learning curve for a lot of people, as there is with all new technology. I'm sure there was the first time a radio was attached to a Model T. But for the NTSB to say that without even knowing that this technology is there is stunning to me.
It really is. And, I mean, when I wrote about this, I got a lot of pushback from, you know, car safety advocates who said, no, it's any distraction. It's listening to the radio or talking to someone in the car,
yeah,
or scratching your nose. You shouldn't be promoting Siri in the car, even if you're not touching or looking at the phone, because it's distraction. So I guess it's one of those, it's like the issue of should they distribute condoms to high school students. You know, are we going to say people are going to use the phone in the car anyway? At least this is better, you know, just to say, same way you might say teenagers are still going to fool around, at least this way they'll be safe. You know what I mean? So it's a battle that will never be won by either side. Yes, in a perfect world, nobody would be distracted. There would be fewer accidents. But if people are going to use the phone in the car, surely something that lets you just speak without looking at the phone without ever taking your eyes off the road is better than trying to sneak glances as you drive. And by the way, Paul, here's a tip for you. It's not even a matter of saying, text my wife, and then Siri says, what do you want to say? You can just say, tell me, and then what you want to say. So you can say, tell my wife I'm running late in one command instead of two. And it'll tell me means text. Sorry, tell my wife means text my wife to Siri. So I do that all the time. I say, tell my daughter to remember her dance clothes or whatever, and it'll prepare the text message in one go.
Very cool. And by the way, let me go on record right now as saying I do not think it's a good idea to distribute condoms to teenagers while you're driving.
It's controversial.
I'm with the NTSB on that one. All right, so what about some other stuff that's in here that you've got in? This is David Pogue, by the way. He's got iPhone, The Missing Manual, which was just published yesterday. And we're talking about some of the tips that you may not know are in this new iPhone 4S. You may have bought it and played around with it, and you don't know what's in there. Tell me some things that are go beyond Siri that you have found inside.
Oh, sure. So I was astonished to find this totally unsung feature in the accessibility settings. So Apple has always tried to be on the cutting edge of helping people with disabilities use their gadgets. So as you know, you can now dictate instead of typing. You can, you've always been able to enlarge the text if you're over 40. You can zoom into the screen. But they've added this whole new thing called assistive touch. And basically, it lets people who can't even move their hands or fingers the phone. So we don't think about somebody with cerebral palsy or something. How are they going to adjust the volume buttons? Or even if your hands are like claws, how are you going to press the home button? So it's this totally amazing new feature that puts a little white bubble in the corner of the screen. And whenever you tap it with anything, with your nose, with your toe, with a pencil, you get this on-screen visual menu of physical gestures, including things like hitting the volume up and down buttons, pressing the home button, shaking the phone, which is how you do undo normally. But what if you can't shake the phone? Well, now you have a way to trigger the equivalent function with your nose or one knuckle or whatever you've got. And you might think, well, you know, I'm not disabled, I don't need that. But a lot of them are really useful features. For example, many people over time find that their home button gets sticky and the home button can't be clicked. Well, now you have a way to press that home button without pressing the home button. Similarly, there's a new feature for deaf people that makes the LED on the back flash really brightly when the phone rings or when you get a text message. So if it's sitting on the desk, it'll catch your attention. Well, you know what? That's useful even if you're not deaf, because if you've got the ringer off, you might miss the call, and now you can have it flash really brightly.
And where do you find that again? In settings under general and then under accessibility?
That's right, under general, under accessibility. And it's a whole new wealth of options called assistive touch. And some of them are useful, as I say, even if you're not disabled. But the fact that they've dedicated a team of engineers just to helping people who have, you know, motor problems, I think that's really above and beyond.
Yeah. They really do amazing stuff here. One of the things that is not so amazing from my experience, I live in the Apple world when I'm mobile, but at home I live in the PC world because I've been part of it for 25 years and I'm just used to it. And when I bought a new laptop this year, I bought a PC laptop instead of a MacBook or a Mac Air or something like that, just my own personal preference. I have found that the two do not play well together when the cloud comes into play. I don't know if you've heard complaints from other people here, but I activated the iCloud on my phone when I got it, and then I activated iCloud to download things to my PC, and the two things do not play well together. I'm sure that Apple will eventually fix these problems, but have you heard about these as well?
I haven't really researched it. iCloud is working really well on my largely Apple-based ecosystem, but it is funny the way throughout history, Apple and Microsoft always play this game. They say we're compatible with the other side. See, you know, Microsoft says we have Microsoft Office for the Mac, but they're never as good as their own, you know, their right. own farm, their own ecosystem. So here we've got iCloud working great on Apple gadgets, but not so great on Windows and vice versa.
Yeah, it works fine for my daughter. She's got a MacBook and she's got an iPhone, so they play well together, but not for mine. And for people who are listening who don't know what the iCloud is, there's been a lot of talk in the last couple of years about doing things in the cloud. Google has Google Docs, where all your stuff resides online, and Quicken has, you know, banking that you never have to have on your computer. It'll all reside in the cloud. But the iCloud takes that to a new level, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's basically mobile me. It's basically a glorified synchronization service. So it keeps your address book, your calendar, your email, and even your photos synchronized among your phone, your tablet, all your computers at home and at work. So if I change a phone number for Paul on my phone, when I get home to my computer, I will find the same change automatically made in the address book there. So really convenient. You have one set of web bookmarks, one set of appointments on your calendar, and so on. PhotoStream is really interesting. That's the one that synchronizes the photos of your life between your phone, your tablet, and your Windows PC or your Mac. So every time you import pictures from your digital camera on your computer at home, it shows up automatically on your phone as though you had synchronized them. And similarly, every picture that you take with the phone shows up on your computer at home and at work, which is really kind of cool. Right now, the one downside of it is that you cannot delete a photo. It's a permanent, well, not a permanent, it's the last 1,000 photos. It's a record of every picture you've taken, and you can't individually delete something embarrassing, which I think is going to bring down more than one politician before this is over. But the rumor is that they're about to come up with an update that lets you delete selectively.
Well, there's all sorts of other stuff that goes on inside the iPhone, so much so that David has written the missing manual for it. It's called iPhone, the Missing Manual. It's just been published. You can get it on Amazon. And there's a website now where you can download it as an ebook, and it's like half price for the next couple of days, right?
Yeah, that's right, at O'Reilly.com. That's the publisher, O'Reilly. And it's available. You get it non-copy protected in every single format, you know, PDF and Kindle and EPUB and all that.
Very, very cool. It's always a pleasure, and you do great work, and I hope you have a very happy New Year, Dave. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much. You too.
David Pogue, iPhone, the Missing Manual. Of course, I've got a link to it right now on my website, harrisonline.com. This is the Big 550 KTRS.